Hi, good afternoon everyone. Rajiv S. Khanna for immigration.com, the offices of Rajiv S. Khanna PC. Today is May 13th, 2010. We are recording this call. Anybody who does not want their voice to be recorded should hang up now. Keep your identities confidential. Remember, this recording is publicly available. I'll be answering your questions first that have been posted on the website. Any answers we provide do not mean that we have agreed to represent you and that we are your lawyers, nor does it mean that you are in any way indebted to us for any kind of fees, etc. This is basically just a community conference call where we're trying to help as many people as we can. Now, let me get started with the questions. As I was mentioning to folks that I probably have enough time to answer the questions that have been posted and maybe 10-15 minutes extra, so we'll do the best we can with the time that we have. Question number one, which is beyond GC. I'm an Indian national and lawful permanent resident since March 2006. Got married. Now, what should I do to get my spouse here? So, green card holder wants to get spouse here. He'll be eligible for his citizenship by January 2011. Should I apply I-130 now, and then when I become a citizen, upgrade it? Or should I wait until I become a citizen, then apply for I-130? I don't think there's much difference in the timing between the two, okay? I would suggest look at the I-130 processing time. If the processing time for the I-130 is more than 6 months, I would file the I-130 now. Okay, that might save you a little bit of time. When you become a citizen, you can upgrade the petition. Next question is K-3 visa still an option? Because it's dead since February 2010 when USCIS said that K-3 will be denied if I-130 has already been approved. Well, first of all, why would, I see you're already married, so it's not, K-1 is not an option. Well, K-3 is still an option, because what happens is, if you do not apply for I-130 now, and you just wait till you become a U.S. citizen, the rule is, if the consulate has not received formal information about the approval of the I-130 from USCIS, they can still approve the K-3. So it may be worth a shot that way if that's what you wish to do. Although the difference between a K-3 and a green card may not be that much. Okay. It appears to me if the processing time of the I-130 is more than 6 months, you're probably better off just filing the I-130 now and then later on upgrading the case. Next question is just a question, H-1 stamping. H-1 got extended to June 2013. Visa stamp expires June 2010. Traveling to India, I will return 10 days before the visa expires. So will I get an I-94 till June 2013, or will I get an I-94 till the extent of my visa? Well, you should get an I-94 till June 20th, 2013. And if CBP gives you an I-94 for a lesser duration, you should talk with the supervisors. Ask to speak with a supervisor and say, under the law, I'm entitled to an I-94 up to June 2013. It does not matter whether my visa is expiring today, tomorrow, or in 10 days. You have to give me an I-94 which is valid to the entire duration of my H-1 approval. Okay? Next question. Number four. I guess the first question was number two. The number one post is just a general post. Okay, got it. So I did two, three, and number four I'm going to do now, which is from BSAK, H-1B LCA-related I-485 issue. He's got a pending employment-based 485 working for the same employer who had filed for the I-140. Recently entered USA using advanced parole, working for the same employer. Previously working in ABC City from 2003 to 2005 for an employer located in XYZ City. The employer had filed LCA only for XYZ. So the previous employer had him working in a city for which he was not approved. That employer is now out of business. Recently I've seen in some forums that USCIS seems to be issuing notice of intent to deny. Yes. Yes, we have dealt with several of these cases. where USCIS issued a notice of intent to deny when they saw that an employee had been working in a location other than that for which the LCA was approved. So what do you do in a case like that? Well, first thing you do is, if the violation is less than 180 days, then you try to argue Section 245K. If the employee had traveled outside USA and entered before filing 485, you again take advantage of Section 245K and tell the government that my illegal period, so-called illegal period, begins to accumulate only after, let me rephrase that. Any, under 245K, any illegality you have before filing the I-485 is forgotten and forgiven if you have traveled outside USA and come back. So each travel basically gives birth to the right to have another 179 days of violation. Kind of, I mean, it's a good rule of thumb to remember. I wouldn't say it's that simple, but basically that's the idea. So I would first argue 245K if I can. Then you have given me an excerpt from Newfield Memorandum that talks about technical violation. That's actually a part of the regulation. That's a part of the regulation. These are definitely in the regulations themselves. So technical violations are also forgiven. I would very strongly argue in these cases that maintaining H-1 status is in the hands of the employer, not in the employee. What can you do? You can't file the LCA. When something is not in your hands, how can they hold you accountable for it? Right? So I would certainly argue that. I don't recall what happened with our cases in which we had a similar issue. I believe they are still pending, but if I hear something, I will post on my blog. Okay? Next question is Zozo000. Have you come across any RFEs for EAD renewal? Not that I can think of. Nothing substantial. Minor things like, you know, something is missing or picture is not correct. Something like that I remember, but nothing substantial. If I move back from EAD to H-1, if you want to go from EAD to H-1, then you have to go outside USA, yes, for a stamping. And what happens is, if you enter USA, don't enter showing them your advanced parole. If you show them your advanced parole, of course they're going to parole you with 1 year duration. But if you show them your H-1 visa stamp, they will give you an I-94 for the entire time of the H-1 approval. Okay, I think I've answered your question. Your question was phrased a little bit difficult to understand. I wasn't sure if that's what you meant, but I think that's what you're trying to ask me. That if I come back, show my H-1 visa, will I get an I-94 covering the entire duration of my H-1 approval, or will I get it for 1 year? You will get it for the entire duration, or you should, okay? Interfiling for spouse versus filing new 485. This is from, let me make sure I'm proceeding in order. Yes. This is from our community member, CK in New Jersey, I guess. CK in NJ. Hello. Okay. So, the question is interfiling for spouse versus filing new 485. I don't think interfiling is the right term here. I'm an Indian national. Recaptured priority date is January 2005 from EBC to EB2. It's current. I would like to add my spouse. They have their own I-140. What is the procedure to interfile? You don't interfile. Let me interject here for a second. I'm assuming that he doesn't have his own 485 filed yet. Oh, he does. Okay, wait. Spouse has his own I-140 and 485 filed earlier by his employer. Okay, so he's got his own 485. USCIS does not like multiple 485s. They have told us several times. Personally, I really don't care. I have been filing multiple 485s forever. Typical this situation is one example where one priority date is current. We should take advantage of it. So if I were you, I would file another 485 for him, like a regular 485 filing. It's not interfiling. That's a different issue altogether. File his 485, but make sure you use the same A number that was given to him when he filed his own I-485. So use the same A number. And you can also send a letter to USCIS saying that he has another 485 pending. And in that other 485, send a letter saying he's got a second 485 pending to his mom. So file 485, use the same A number, send a letter to both cases that the other case is pending. I hope it's clear. And you do get a receipt notice, of course, because you'll be paying new fees, so you will get a receipt notice for that. Next question is AQUIB, pending AOS and reckless driving ticket, class 1 misdemeanor. Yeah, this can get complicated. I'm a resident of Virginia. Last month, I got a reckless driving ticket for speeding. Not driving under influence, and the cop charged me with reckless driving by speed ticket. I just came to know that Virginia reckless driving is a class 1 misdemeanor criminal charge. Any impact on pending 485? Well, remember one thing. First of all, there is under the law an exception to one conviction. If you are in your life convicted of only one offense, and you don't have any problem with drugs or alcohol, if it's only one offense and it's a misdemeanor, punishable by less than 1 year, and the sentence imposed is less than 6 months, you are covered. You're forgiven completely. It has no effect on your green card. Okay, you're forgiven completely. That's called the petty. P as in Peter. E, T as in Tom. T as in Tom. Y, like in small, minor, petty offense exception. You can actually Google that, and you'll come up with enough law that explains to you that petty offense exception will take care of your problem. So if it's the only misdemeanor you ever had, and even if you get convicted, it should not affect your green card. But the most important thing is to try to get the reckless driving pleaded down to a merely traffic offense of some kind of speeding instead of reckless. So what you should do, in my opinion, is get yourself a lawyer, let them argue your case for you. Maybe they can get this thing pleaded down to just a traffic ticket. Okay? That would be the ideal situation. But even if you did get prosecuted, it appears to me, again, I haven't studied your case in detail, it appears to me that the conviction would be covered by a petty offense exception. Next question is Amber Rahman. Applying for advanced parole on H-1B. This question is on behalf of my husband. He came to U.S. on F-1 2002, never left the country. He's a state employee on H-1B. Very reluctant to go to home country because he might get stuck there. They are going through extensive background checks, etc., etc. He's also in the process of getting his green card from his employer. I-140 was approved. Waiting for visa numbers to become available, so he can't apply for I-485. So the question is, his grandmother is very sick. Is there any way, any kind of advance parole that can be applied before his 485 is filed? And the answer is no. No. You cannot apply for any kind of advance parole before the 485 is filed in your circumstances. There are circumstances where paroles can be obtained, such as humanitarian parole. But this is not the kind of case where you're likely to get that kind of parole. It looks like you're stuck with trying to get an H-1 visa stamping. Because he works directly as a state employee, it may not be a big deal for them to get an H-1 approval. But again, I don't know the case. I don't know how good the H-1 is, how it was filed. So it is very difficult for me to make a judgment about how easy it would be to get an H-1 stamping. But chances are, if you have 2 months available to stay in, I'm assuming India, or Pakistan, I think it looks like there should be enough time to get the H-1 approval, but it's impossible for me to say. Okay? But to answer your question again, I do not know of any kind of parole that would avoid the necessity of having to go for visa stamping. Cindy 56, I'm the mother of a U.S. citizen. She filed immigration papers for me to become LPR. I overstayed in USA for 3 years. I'm now out of the country. Ma'am, as far as I know, again, it depends upon the timing. If it was in the recent years, having overstayed in USA past your I-94, again, there are so many variables there also, but if your I-94 has expired and you stay in USA for over 1 year, and then you leave USA, if you had not left USA, that's okay, that would have been okay. But if you leave USA, as far as I know, you become subject to 10-year bar. And the only way that bar can be waived is if there is an exceptional or extreme hardship to the U.S. citizen's child is included. So you can look into that, any kind of exceptional extreme hardship angle. The fact that you have a visa which is valid till 2011 does not matter. The only thing I would say is the angle that I can think of is two angles, actually. One is extreme and exceptional hardship to the U.S. citizen relative, or maybe wait for the law to be changed. If the laws get changed, you might be able to take advantage of that. One more thing is that it'll be 3 years since I came back to Trinidad. Well, it's a 10-year bar, so unless you've been outside USA for 10 years, the bar is not complied. Next question is Fantastic M. Mother is a green card holder since Feb 2001. She's planning to apply for citizenship in July 2010. In the last five years, she's made 3 trips of around 8 months and 2 trips of less than 6 months. So 3 trips of 8 months would be 24 months. And 2 trips of less than 6 months. You need to have physical presence in the U.S. for 2.5 years. 2.5 years, which means 30 months, right? So if she has 30 months inside USA in the last 5 years, she will have to explain all trips outside USA for more than 6 months as to what the reason for the trips was. Was she maintaining her permanent home in USA while she was gone for 8 months? So if she does not have good, truthful answers for those problems, for the visits, she will probably decline citizenship. I'm making a guess here. This is not a mathematical issue. It's a matter of judgment call for USCIS. If they believe that she has not interrupted her stay in USA, they will approve citizenship, otherwise they will not. So it depends upon her reasons for traveling outside. Next question is Scranton, PA. Change of status from H-4 to H-1. So this community member wants to know, I have an H-1 approval, I'm here, but I'm here on H-4, and now my choices are, do I get H-1 visa stamping outside USA or have the employer file for change of status? There are no interview dates available in Chennai because of the travel season. What are the risks with filing a change of status? Well, the most obvious risk is that filing a change of status is like reopening the case. Basically, you will be applying for the H-1 all over again, and they can create all kinds of problems. Premium processing or regular processing. What are the usual reasons for an RFC or rejection of change of status? If not change of status that I'm worried about, that is usually not denied as long as you've been maintaining status. What I am concerned about is, just in general, the difficulty for getting H-1 approvals. Let me verify one thing. One of the things is that you got your H-1B approval in April, and you'll be joining the employer, let's say, in May or June. Yeah, I think you should be okay. You should be able to get change of status The approval is rather recent, so it looks like your employer had the right documentation. So my best guess is, not knowing your case, it should be approved. Fantastic M also has another question. How can I confirm that my green card has been filed under EB2 category and not EB3 category? You can ask your lawyers to give you a copy of the form 9089 and show it to a lawyer. Form 9089, the PERM application. RAL400 wants to know how to withdraw N400 properly. They do not want to, they have yet to receive fingerprint notice. They don't want to lose their original nationality. So they want to know, if I just don't show up for fingerprinting, is that good enough? You know, you just send a letter. Just send a letter. Registered mail, or, you know, just even regular mail is okay. To USCIS requesting that you wish to withdraw your N-400. That's all it should take. And you can send the letter notarized. So get the letter notarized. That would make it a little easier. So if you don't show up for fingerprinting, will that automatically withdraw the application? It does, and it should. But it's better to just ask for the withdrawal. Should I have to do something by law to withdraw the application, such as writing? I just told you that you should do that. Third, the withdrawal will impact my application again in 2 or 3 years? It should not. Will it impact my renewal of green card? It should not. Is there anything else I should pay attention to? I can't think of anything else. Next question, Sai IMN, which is question number 15. Just a second, I think we're doing fairly well. I thought it was going to take longer than this. It's only 2:22 right now. His employer has not given him a copy of his labor and I-140. He wants to leave the employer and take up another job. The employer will surely revoke the I-140. I don't have labor I-140 copy. I only have the job description used for the labor substitution. I was made to sign on white paper a declaration that I will not leave the company until 6 months. Well, this question about making you sign some kind of a bond for 6 months, that you need to discuss with your local lawyers wherever you are located. It could be an issue of contract more than anything else. But also, tell your lawyers, whoever you consult, to consult with an immigration lawyer as well. Because certain things are prohibited by H-1 regulations. Maybe not by green card regulations, but H-1B regulations prohibit penalties for the employee to leave early. Okay? So get it reviewed by both an immigration as well as a local lawyer. I think the contract should be reviewed just to determine if it's enforceable. You have a job description. You need the job title, job description, and salary to file for AC-21 portability. You may also want to file a Freedom of Information Act FOIA/Privacy Act request that might get you a copy of your documents, including maybe a copy of the labor certification that was filed. This you can get from the USCIS website. There's a form. I forgot the name of the form. It's called Freedom of Information Act /Privacy Act request. It's I something. There's a list of forms. They just go over the list of the forms there. Fill the form in a few months. You will get a complete copy of, well, not a complete copy, but at least a copy of all the documents that USCIS has on you. You might be able to get a copy of your labor cert through this method. So, other than that, I mean, of course, if you can get a copy from your employer, that would be wonderful. If your I-485 has been pending 180 days, which it is, even if the employer revokes the I-140, it should not affect your ability to carry your green card forward, nor should affect your ability to carry your priority date forward. So The key here is to get the job description, job title, and salary information, and make sure you obtain a job that is same or similar. Next question, no, 123270. How do I get out of I-134? Well, the good news is an I-134 in general is a very weak document. I doubt very much you'll ever be billed for any government assistance. Okay? So I don't think the I-134 is going to become a major problem for you personally. I-864, on the other hand, is a totally different ballgame. That's a tough document. You got to be careful when you sign that. I-134 itself, I don't think it's a big deal. I could be wrong, but I've never known any cases where government or any individual was able to claim specific amounts for somebody who had signed an I-134. Next question is PSY4GC, question number 17. Son is planning to go to college on H4. Is he eligible for CPT? Sir, as far as I know, CPT is only for people who are on F1. OPT CPT is a function of F1, not of H4. I don't know if there's any way an H4 holder can get CPT. You can double check with the International Students Office, but I'm pretty sure they cannot. I understand from earlier posts that one can be on H4 status till 21 years. Yeah, that's correct. Continuing on H4 status, is it a good idea or applying for F1 is good? Of course, I think F1 is better because F1 gives you some additional options that H4 does not. But the problem is, since he had earlier filed 485 and he's waiting for motion to reopen, and F1 may not be a realistic option. So therefore, H4 seems to be a more realistic option. What is better is definitely F1, but I don't think he will be able to easily get an F1. You can try if you wish. Next question is solicit divorce and implications on my citizenship green card for my current wife. I got married when my 45 was pending, applied for her green card. Shortly after my GC approval, marriage turned sour. She left USA with AP. Her green, and then she's been outside USA for almost 3 years. Yeah, the green card is gone. Unless she has some exceptionally good explanation, that green card is over. If she never returned to USA and she was outside for 3 years, that green card is gone. Is this going to pose any issue for my citizenship? No, not at all. I've since got married again, and I want to file for my wife again. Is this going to be a problem? I don't see any problem at all. I think this will be fine. Next question, Kavita_K, contacted DOL. I'm on H-1B visa, work for a company, move to company B. 6 years of H-1B will be completed. I see. You want to get an approval of H-1 beyond 6 years through company B based upon a labor certification / perm application filed by company A. So the question is, how can I get a screenshot? Is it possible, question number one, is it possible that my company B could write a letter to USCIS? Well, first of all, screenshot is not given. I see. And request them to get a screenshot directly from DOL? No. As far as I know, that process works only for permanent green cards, permanent ETA applications like 9089. It does not work for in cases where, let me rephrase that. I'm sorry, I didn't mean it that way. What I mean is that works only if the labor cert is approved and then lost. And then you can ask USCIS to directly ask for a copy of the labor cert or a confirmation from U.S. Department of Labor. I have never known of any way a screenshot is obtained this way. Because remember, Company B is a stranger to Company A. How can USCIS violate the privacy of Company A and give Company B that information? I don't think it will work at all. Question number two, can I email DOL to obtain a screenshot? You can try, but usually, because the perm application is the application of the employer, they would normally not give a screenshot to individuals, as far as I know, but you can try. No harm in trying. Should I call this number? I tried, it did not work. I'm not surprised. Is there any alternative to request DOL? The only alternative that I know of is to get the employer to give it to you, the screenshot. Next question is Venu.Gopal on H-1B visa, got laid off on November 2nd, filed for H-1B transfer November 5th. There's a three-day gap. So how many days does it take USCIS to revoke my company A's H-1B visa? It doesn't matter how much time, but they revoke it usually effective from the date they received the revocation request. So if USCIS receives the request on November 3rd, but they act on the request 2 months later, they will retroactively revoke the H-1. They'll revoke it from the date they received the request for revocation. If I extend my H-1B based on previous perm, are there any chances that USCIS could go back and check that my employment with Company A ended? If I extend my... Oh, it's allowed. Under the law, there is no law that says you must be currently employed by the sponsoring or the petitioning employer for perm in order to get an H-1 extension based upon that application, and that extension is through another employer. So even if your perm was filed by employer A, employer B can legally apply for your H-1 extension beyond 6 years. And it's not illegal to do that, as far as I know. Does USCIS consider my status as out of status? See, the gap is only 3 days. They may decide to forgive that, but certainly, yes, that period is considered to be out of status. And once you're out of status, then you're out of status until it is reversed. So Bharati_Vidya wanted to know, I'm just curious to know what's happening to comprehensive immigration reform, ma'am, you and everybody else. At this time, we don't know what's going on with the reform. Is it even going to get passed or proposed this year, next year? Nobody knows. So don't build any plans on this, Vidyaji. You just have to wait and watch, like all of us are doing. This looks like the last, the second last question. This is Imtiaz Hussain, who wants to know, he's from Pakistan, he has done avionics engineering, how do I get an H-1? Well, the first thing is you need to procure a job in USA. Once you get a job in USA, then the employer can start your H-1 process. Okay, so the first thing to do is get a job in USA. Then Monica posted a question from J1969 about AC21. Wife is working in the school district for last 8 years. She got laid off. Last working is June 10th. Green card is under process. She has EAD. Hasn't used her EAD. She's on H-1. I'm on H-4. Two U.S. born kids. In this situation, what are our options? Well, if you want to change jobs, you can do so using AC21 if somebody's I-140 is approved and their 45 has been pending more than 180 days. They can take a similar job, similar to what was described in the labor certification, anywhere in the United States. That pretty much covers my question-answer portion. I thought it was going to take 40-45 minutes. It took us 35 minutes to get here, which is pretty good. So we've got 25 minutes. I am going to first answer the questions that are follow-ups on what I have just discussed. Only follow-ups from people who have posted, please.
Hi, Rajiv.
Yes, ma'am. Go ahead.
I'm number 6 question to the IDCK in NJ. I know your response for my question was to go with a separate 485 instead of asking USCIS to approve the 485 with the most recent 140?
They can't do that. Yeah.
Hello?
They will approve, let me rephrase that. They will only approve your I-485. I do not believe they will convert the existing 45 to a derivative.
Sorry, it's a little bit noisy for me.
Okay, hang on. Let me just
put everybody on.
Hang on one second. Okay, NJ, go ahead and press *6. *6 on your phone. Can you hear me? Can you talk to
yes,
me?
Yes, yeah, I just pressed *6 on my line.
Good.
I guess
that's all we need to do. So, yes, I think an additional 485 will be required. That is correct.
So that's the case for, I know that question is for my husband who's a dependent on my green card,
mm-hmm.
but is that the same for my application as well?
You have a case pending under EB2 already, right?
Yeah, originally I had the EB3 and the 485 based on the EB3. Now I had an EB2. My lawyer, I don't think she applied for a separate 485 for the most recent EB2.
No, you don't have to apply for a separate 485. What you do is, you send the I-140 to INS and ask them to interfile the I-140, your I-140 on top of the existing I-140.
Okay.
So you will get the priority date of EB3 case, but the category of EB2.
Yes, that happened. I got a new 140 approved with EB2 with the priority date of EB3. But for the 485 stage, she just wrote a letter to the USCIS to approve my pending 485.
That's all you're required to do.
Okay,
that's what interfiling is.
But for my husband, you're saying it's better to file a separate 485 based on my most recent...
I don't think you have a choice. I don't think you have a choice.
Oh, she actually... Okay, my current lawyer hasn't done that. They just asking the USCIS to approve his pending 485 based on my 140.
You know, USCIS can do a lot of things, and I have known them to, for example, we've known family-based 485s to be converted to employment-based 485s, okay? But I've never known of a case in which my own 485 pending through my employment has been converted to a derivative 485. However, I would not be surprised. I always double-check. You know, there are so many little implications in the law that nobody knows it all. I would suggest, your lawyer may be right, maybe she knows something I don't. What you can do is, you can call that's one good way to start, you can call the customer service and see if this can be done. I don't think it can.
Okay, in that case, as per what my lawyer has done, will that make my husband's current approved 140 invalidate?
No, not at all.
Okay, so still he could use his 140 in case something has to happen with my job or anything.
Absolutely.
And now since my employer has used my existing 485 and asked the USCIS to interfile, if I have to quit this job, can I still keep my 485 based on EB3 or will my 140 be revoked? If my employer...
Your I-140 is already approved under both EB3 and EB2. And your 485 is already pending more than 180 days.
Mm-hmm.
If you get a job similar to your EB2 job, you should be able to keep both your priority date of EB3 and your EB2 approval and transfer it to the next employer.
Okay, so that does not give my employer right to revoke the most recently approved EB2 140.
No, ma'am. They have the right to revoke the I-140. It just doesn't affect you.
Okay. And I just one more question. You answered a similar question before on the reckless driving. I don't have any such thing, but I recently got involved into an accident and I filed a police report. And as per the police report, I have no fault and all the fault is on the other driver. Will I still have to be worried about a name check or doing the background check?
I don't think that's a problem at all. You were a victim, not a charged or accused person. No problem.
No, I didn't even get any ticket, nothing.
As long as you didn't hit me, I'm fine.
Never.
Yeah, hi, Rajiv.
Okay, good luck.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Yeah,
hi, Rajiv.
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
This is Kavita's husband, Rajiv.
Yeah, Kavita.
Yeah, Kavita has posted a question. Luckily, I hope you're doing well, by the way. Yeah, she just received a screenshot from her previous employer.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, thank you so much. That says that it is certified. But I have a follow-up question on behalf of her. So, but this screenshot is from her previous employer. She has a copy, and basically she wants to extend her H-1B beyond 6 years with her current employer based on previous perm. But her question is, she has a copy of the perm application which has the ETA case number on it along with the perm screenshot. A document, both are from previous employers. So using these documents, would she be able to request the Department of Labor to give her a letter stating that perm with her previous employer is certified?
If you have a screenshot, that's all you need. Certified, that's not a problem.
No, she has a screenshot that says that the perm is certified. And she has a perm application that has an ETA case number.
All USCIS needs is a screenshot that shows that the case was filed more than a year ago. Okay? If the perm is approved, as long as 180 days are not passed since the date of the approval, they should be able to approve the H-1 through the new employer. If 180 days have passed, then they will not approve.
Yes, sir. But the thing is, I saw the screenshot. The screenshot does not have any information like when it was certified or when the perm is going to get expired.
No. But does it say when it was filed?
Yes, it says that it was filed.
That's all you need to know. USCIS doesn't care about anything.
So, because what her paralegal, company's paralegal is saying that is she needs to obtain a letter from her previous employer stating that the perm is certified, or she needs to obtain a copy of the actual perm approved, a copy of the approval of the perm.
Sir, I don't do the filings myself, but as far as I know, feel free to read this or play this for the paralegal. I don't know of anything in law that requires you to produce a copy of the perm application itself. All you need is a screenshot, and that should be sufficient as far as I know.
Okay, so she is going to submit all her H-1B documents along with the screenshot that shows that it is certified, along with the ETA perm application, which has the same ETA case number. So that it should be fine, correct?
That should be fine. Also, remember, file this case premium processing, because you don't want this case to stay pending for 180 days and then they'll say, oh, wait a minute, I-140 has not been filed, so labor cert is expired.
Got it. I got it. And also one other question is that if the letter is required, can her current employer contact the Department of Labor?
No, they will not and should not accede to the request of a stranger to the application.
I'm sorry, please say that again.
They should not and will not accede, understand, or act upon the request of a stranger.
Okay. Or how about you, if USCIS needs a letter from her previous employer, so if her current employer sends...
But I've never known USCIS to require anything beyond a screenshot.
Even though it is certified. Okay, great.
I can double check that for you. Hang on 1 second.
Okay, thank you.
Send me an email to the contact us form.
Sure, sir.
And just say, Rajiv, I was on the conference today. Can you confirm for me if in your office you had to provide a copy of the perm or just a screenshot is enough even where the perm is approved? This is in reference to an H-1 extension beyond 6 years.
Sure, I will do that. Okay.
Yeah, I don't see anybody from the H-1 section. I'm actually logged out from our IM, Internet Messenger. So when I do the conference call, I just log out from everything else. So I don't know if I could find anybody for you right now. Just go ahead and send me an email through the contact us form. They'll forward the email to me within a day or two. You should have a response tomorrow.
Okay, sir. Sir, one last question. Just in case if we need to obtain a letter. We know that her current...
You cannot obtain a letter from Department of Labor. Obtaining a letter, short of filing a lawsuit, you're not going to get a letter from Department of Labor.
Okay. So what if her current employer sends a letter to the USCIS to obtain a letter directly from
If there is no procedure for that.
So USCIS cannot write a letter to Department of Labor and ask for
will not, cannot and will not write a letter like that.
Hi, Rajiv.
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay, sir. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. Good luck.
This is Beyond GC, question number one.
Yes, sir.
So I wanted to check, like, you know, is applying a B2 visa an option after once you file for the
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that question. Look, there is no law that says she cannot apply for B2 or F1. But as a practical matter, if her husband is a green card holder in USA, it's very unlikely they're going to give her a B2 or F1.
Okay.
Not impossible. As long as you tell the truth, disclose the fact that you are here, and she applies for it truthfully, she gets rejected. It's not the end of the world.
Okay, so that's not going to have any negative
impact. No negative impact. As long as you don't lie about anything, a straight out denial has no effect on a future application for K, H, or green card.
Okay.
Okay.
Mr.
Khanna,
thank you. Sir.
Good luck, sir.
Mr. Khanna.
Yes, sir.
Good morning, sir.
Yes, sir.
This is from 1069.
What question number are you, sir?
First question posted by Monica. My name is Jane.
Oh, yes, yes, J69. I remember that. AC21 question, right?
She was a math teacher.
She's a teacher. Her green card, she works for the school system.
Exactly. She's an academic. She's an E3, she got to get the same kind of job, right?
Right.
USA. That's why I got it.
Right.
So if she can't get the job, cannot say, yes, sir.
Actually, let me understand. Your question is, if she doesn't get a job right away, is that a problem?
Right.
Okay. I don't think so. If you look at my blog and read the entries under AC21, we have discussed this issue in quite some detail that, you know, it's sort of like if they don't ask you, you're not required to produce a letter at all. So if for 6 months she doesn't find a job, or 8 months or 10 months or even a year she doesn't find a job, as long as USCIS doesn't send a letter in the meanwhile requesting that you provide a new letter of employment, you are okay. The only problem is, if the old employer revokes the I-140, then USCIS often sends you a letter of a notice of intent to deny, giving you only 30 days to produce the required evidence. But if they don't withdraw the I-140 or revoke the I-140, you have nothing to worry about as long as you get a job eventually.
And since I am on H-4, I mean, so she got a EAD, we didn't, we are keeping her H-1. Earlier I was on H-1 and I came back and so that all would live together. So my H-4 is in danger right now, right?
Yes, because she is my not on H-1, therefore you are not on H-4.
Exactly. So my option here, can I go on F-1 visa?
You can certainly try, but I'm sure you were named in the I-140.
No. In fact, I didn't mention my name there.
You can try going on F1. You may not be able to do it within USA because you may not be considered to be in status. But,
I mean, my visa expired on August 1st, 2010.
The problem is she is not maintaining her status because she got laid off for the next year.
Okay.
Last day. Oh, you know what? Hang on. Last day is going to be June 10th, right?
Right.
So, you are still in status. Yeah, apply for an F1 right away. You should be fine.
Yes. So, apply before... It got to be approved before...
No. It just has to be applied before June 10th.
That's it.
As long as USCIS receives it before June 10th, you are not out of status. You are in authorized period of stay awaiting adjudication of your F1 request.
And one thing, sir, born here, is there a so we can apply for through their status? Is there any way that?
Children, two children, 4 and 3 years old?
Yeah.
When the children turn 21, they can apply for you.
Okay.
So only 17 and 18 years to wait.
Exactly, I am, sir. And one more last question, sir. I am talking to one of my previous employer. if they do my H-1 visa, since I applied for my H-4 visa last year, June 2nd, if I apply before June 2nd, which is going to be within a year.
Oh, wait.
Go back on H-4.
Wait. Quota is not a problem. Quota only applies to you if you are physically outside USA for 1 year. So even though you are H-4 for 1 year or 10 years, if you are within USA, we don't care. Quota doesn't apply to you.
Oh, really? But I've been here last summer, though. Once I came back on H-4, we've been to India for a couple of months and came back.
Couple of months is not a problem. One continuous year is a problem.
Oh, so I can apply for either H-1
yes,
or...
First of all, H-1 is still, quota is still available. It's not a problem.
Right,
Second of all, you are not subject to the H-1 quota.
Yes, thank you so much, sir. I really appreciate it, sir.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Hi, Rajiv. I posted a question regarding the H-1 stamping validity and the petition validity or
I-94.
What number are you?
It's the question number 3.
Today I have a printout. Usually I don't keep a printout, so I don't know numbers because I don't like to kill trees.
Okay, it's the second question, actually, if you go there.
Question number 2. Indian National LPR.
No, not that one.
Number 3, next one.
Yeah, the next one.
My current H-1 visa stamping.
I have a follow-up question on that one. For the visa stamping, I've heard that they're asking for, like, all the wages of all the employees and all the things, those kind of things in many cases.
Have you heard of Janam Patris? You know what a Janam Patris is?
Yeah.
Basically, they are asking for your Janam Patris.
Now, is it only for consulting companies or is it like for...
No, it is for everybody. But typically, consulates are now in the business of astrology. They are not in the business of visa stamping. They are asking for so much information that it's almost ridiculous. Okay.
Yeah.
However, this is not new. It has been going on for close to about a year.
Okay. And
now people are noticing it more since that January 8th memorandum came out.
Right.
So all in all, this has been going on for a few months, and I wouldn't let it spook me. Are you working for a consulting company?
No, I'm a full-time employee, and we are a 100 employee company, and only 2 of us are on H-1 actually.
I don't think you'll have a problem getting it.
Okay, thank you. And one last question on this one, the follow-up question. I heard that if you don't have a visa but you have an I-94, you can travel to Canada for less than 30 days and return. Is that correct?
That is correct, but you can't go to India from there.
Yeah, I know that. I mean, I'm planning for a Canadian immigration. I'm trying for that, and I'll need to go there for landing.
So. If your trip is less than 30 days, no problem.
Okay, thank you very much.
Good luck. Next question, folks.
BSAC, question number 4.
Yes, sir.
It's the H-1B LCA related 485 issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm looking at this. Go ahead.
Right.
Yeah, you're talking about the past employer never got the LCA approved. Can you be held up for that? Hold on 1 second. Let me walk over to our green card section or get somebody in here. I know that we had an issue like this just recently. I don't know if that case got approved or not. I think it's still pending. I'm going to put you on hold for just a minute. Let me walk over somewhere.
Okay, thank you.
We only have 5-6 minutes. Why don't you call me back? Write down my phone number, 703.
Okay.
908.
Okay.
4800.
Okay.
Extension 110. Call me as soon as we hang up.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Yeah, what we do is, as soon as we finish this conference call, call me.
Mm-hmm.
I will put you on hold and I'll check for you if what happened with our cases, whether they got approved, what is going on.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay. Yeah, sure. Folks, anybody else?
Hello?
Yes, ma'am.
Yes, hi, Rajiv. This is Amber Rahman. I'm calling on behalf of my husband.
Assalamu alaikum, ji.
Wa alaikum salam. We are from Pakistan and he hasn't left the country since 2002. The only
Aapka question number kya, Mohtarma?
I think it's 6.
Let me just get to it. 1 second. I need to know for sure what you're asking. I kind of remember your question. I am getting old, not as sharp as I used to be. It's not six. 7.
Seven.
No, it's not 7. That's all right. We'll find you. Yeah, you're number 8. Applying for advanced parole on H-1B. He came on F-1. He's a state employee. So you're applying? Yeah, I told you that you should be able to get, he's a direct state employee or does he go through a consulting company?
No, no, he's a direct state employee. Actually, he works as a computer programmer for a state university.
Mm-hmm. Usually, Amber, these are usually easy H1s. Usually. Okay? University employee, salary is not an issue, job location is not an issue. He's not working for an end client, two, three different tiers of companies. So normally these are easier cases to get approved, especially in your case. Since you have 2 months' time, apply, get your H1 appointment as early as you can. Get there, apply for the H1, and then wait. Within 2 months, they should be able to approve it. Now, unless there is a background check or something that he gets stuck in, that I can't anticipate. There's no way for us to tell. But usually, these cases are not that difficult to get approved.
So, you would recommend that we go to Pakistan and not in Canada?
You can go to Canada. There was a time when Pakistan was one of the 8 countries that were not allowed to apply in Pakistan, in Canada. But I recently found out that they've taken Pakistan off that list. So, I personally feel, yes, it would be better if you go to a third country. Where is his degree from?
His bachelor's and master's is from the same university which he works for.
So he's America trained.
Yes.
I think he should be able to get it from Canada. Tell him to try it.
Actually, what happened was in 2007 when we were getting married, we applied for the Canadian visa and we got an appointment with the U.S. Embassy there for the stamp. But he got a call and they told him his case would take long and so we decided not to risk it.
In those days, things were different, Amber. 2007, actually, I think they were, Pakistan was one of the 8 countries they didn't even want to entertain in Canada.
Oh, okay.
So you may want to double check this. I don't think this is an issue any longer.
Okay, well, there's also another concern that his last name has the word Bin in it.
So, like Bin Laden?
Yes.
Well, Bin simply
means... It's not actually Bin Laden, but it's Bin Khalid.
Yeah, Bin simply means son of. I don't think that's the
problem. Yes, exactly, but, you know, how...
No, those guys are... They're not so illiterate. Not. They may be stupid, but they're not so stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's because...
You don't think that would raise a red flag for him?
No, I don't think so. I mean, there is like a gazillion people with Bin in their name. If I know correctly, even Israelis have that tradition of Bin. So I don't think, personally, I don't think it's an issue. But you know, you may be dealing with a machine that is just too big for us to anticipate. Ultimately, I don't think you have a choice. You have to take a chance somewhere.
Yes. Well, actually, the EB3 category keeps regressing. So
yeah.
I don't know why
that is going on. Yeah. No, that's definitely an issue that you can't do anything about. So try getting an H-1 visa stamping. If you are a little adventurous, just do it in Pakistan. The reason I like that option is because you've got 2 months to stay there. But
he's spoken to his employer and they said even if it takes 4 months, they're fine with it.
Then you should go to Pakistan because I feel, look, if you get stuck in Canada, then you've got no place. You know, if they just hold you there, it could be a long time and you don't really... I mean, if you have a place to stay and you're comfortable there, you've got a visa duration for that much time in Canada, you could do it in Canada. But I feel comfortable sending him to Pakistan.
Okay.
He's not working on any weapons-grade technologies or anything. He's just basically programmer type of dude, right? Just a techie guy.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He should be all right.
Yeah, hello?
Just 1 second. Amber, are you done?
Yes, I'm done. Thank you so much.
Good luck to you, Jim. All right, next question, please.
Hello, sir. I have a quick question for you.
Yeah, ma'am, just 1 second. Is this an addition to something that has not been posted?
Yes.
Yeah, just give me 1 second. Just give
sure.
Me one. Folks, anybody who has posted anything that needs to talk with me? Very good. We're done. Go ahead, ma'am.
Okay. I hired an attorney for my N-400 application.
Mm-hmm.
And my interview is on June 3rd, but for some reason, I just fired my attorney. And yesterday, she sent me an email that I'm going to withdraw your case and this, that, all that stuff.
Oh, you say you withdraw your case, I'll withdraw your license to practice.
That's what I was wondering. She cannot withdraw my case without
of course
any, without my consent, right?
Of course not.
Okay. So when I go for my interview, do I need to like take D-28 form or just tell them that my...
No, ma'am. I have my typical, when a person calls me for an N-400, my typical response is, why do you need a lawyer? And they say, well, I have this problem in my background. I was, you know, I had a, I don't know, a conviction. Then you need a lawyer. But 99% of the cases, I don't see why N-400 or family-based I-130s should need a lawyer.
Actually, my spouse overstayed the B-2 visa, so that's why I thought, hello?
So still not a problem.
I thought so maybe the lawyer will be a really help, but she sent me an email that I can withdraw your case. I was wondering, is that possible? And you said no.
You were not involved in any kind of smuggling or anything, were you?
No, of course not.
Like you smuggled him in your car into the country?
No. He came through Canada and he mentioned that my spouse has a green card and they still give the B2 visa. So it was like there was no lie, nothing.
No, good. I don't see any problem. And if the lawyer is actually a licensed attorney, first of all, it's a very dumb thing for a lawyer to say this to you, that I'll withdraw your case. They cannot.
Okay. But do I need to inform USCIS or
not at all. You can when you go for the citizenship interview, just let them know my lawyer has been fired. Please take his D-28 off and know that all correspondence is to be done with me directly.
Okay.
And actually take a letter in writing that says the same thing. Submit it to them.
Okay, I had her email, so I can talk to them.
Take a letter for USCIS saying that she's no longer my lawyer.
Okay, and I just submit them there.
Yes, ma'am, and if she tries to withdraw your N-400, you will file a motion to reopen the N-400. First, you will file a complaint against her to the bar saying that she has withdrawn my N-400 without my permission, and you will file a copy of that complaint with a motion to reopen your N-400 should be reopened.
Okay, I mean, I was just worried when she sent me this last night, so I was like, okay, I need to...
Utter nonsense. I'm surprised a lawyer would behave like that.
I think she just delivered the baby, so...
Well, that still doesn't mean that she gets the license to behave like that.
But that's what my question was. Thanks a lot.
You're fine.
Thank you.
Good luck. Folks, I've got to run. Does anybody have a quick question that I can ask?
This is Amber Raj. We just had a very quick question.
Who is this?
I'm Amber.
Yaji, Amber Bolia.
Yes. I'm sure you're aware of the recent, the Times Square bombing, which is, you know, the Pakistani was implicated in that.
Yes, ma'am.
Do you think that would have any effect on the background checks? And
Pakistanis get arrested and they get convicted also all the time. It doesn't mean, and the entire Pakistan is bad. I don't think that's a problem.
So you don't anticipate a further delay in the, actually the administrative processing is what worries us. You know,
I haven't heard anything so far, Amber. I haven't heard anything that says that there's some extra scrutiny for Pakistan over and above what already existed before this last bombing attempt. I'm not aware of any such.
Okay, thank you so much for your...
You're welcome. There was another sound. Somebody else wanted to say something? Folks, anybody has anything else? Okay, very good. Good talking with all of you. Thank you very much for your time.
How do I stop the recording?
It doesn't stop.